The McIlvaney Weekly Commentary, covering monetary, economic, and geopolitical news events. Now here are Kevin Orrick and David McIlvaney.
Welcome to the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary. I'm Kevin Orrick along with David McIlvaney. As promised, David, we talked about having Alan Newman back. We have him back today to talk about precious metals. But precious metals, as long-term safe as they may be, really do, in a way, require, on the short run, a cast iron stomach.
Well, and you know, what we've seen over the last 10 years is a steady two steps forward, one step back.
Right.
And that two steps forward, one step back is a normal, healthy behavior in any bull market, because you're defining normal. And what I mean by normal is that you have people who are both bullish and bearish, and there's a struggle for who's right in the equation. It's right. Almost like a market argument. No, I have reasons to be bullish. No, I have reasons to be bearish. And so you see that volatility on a daily, weekly, monthly, or annual basis. And there's periods where the bulls are winning, and there's periods where the bears are winning, at least in the short term, these short-term little cycles. But ultimately, what you see is an unhealthy and unsustainable market dynamic where there's only bulls and the price is only moving up. There is no period of consolidation. There is no step back. And the reason I say that's unhealthy, it can be, of course, be very profitable.
Right.
But it's unhealthy because ultimately you run out of people to come into the market. You run out of buyers.
That's what a bubble is. I mean, when people talk about gold being in a bubble, that's laughable because you don't have hardly anyone in the market right now. You brought up in the past, America right now is buying just about twice what Turkey is buying and about 2.5 times what Vietnam is buying in the way of gold. You even mentioned in the latest video that we have online, The Fuse is Lit, that people do have to have a longer-term view and a cast-iron stomach and be willing to hold on. But when you're in a bull market, the consolidation phase is always the best time to buy, is it not?
That's true. Now, what we contrasted in that most recent film clip was what kind of volatility a client should be expecting, because in the physical metals, there's far less volatility,
sure.
Specifically gold, a little bit more volatility with physical silver,
yeah.
More volatility with gold stocks,
right.
All of which can be appropriate. But again, know who you are as an investor as you approach the investment markets so that you know what you're going to experience and what you can actually sustain. Are you going to lose sleep at night on physical gold? I would guess no one would.
Right.
Physical silver, perhaps a little bit more. And mining shares, spectacular indeed, but they can also add a line item to your monthly budget, that for Maalox or Pepto-Bismol.
Well, and I must mention Cross Currents, which is the newsletter that Alan Newman writes, is a stock market newsletter. Okay, it's dealing with equities. In fact, he even told you recently, I'm not going to talk about bonds. I'm not going to talk about things that are not my specialty. Stocks are. And David, there really is a volatility difference. Like you said, physical gold, I don't know that I know what I've paid for any of my physical gold. I don't care. I just put it aside. I know it gets worth more and more against the dollar. Silver, you have to watch a little closer. Gold stocks, on the other hand, it's a piece of paper representing a company. It is something that you want to buy well and sell well.
It's so fascinating to me, Kevin, because I've done a number of interviews the last couple of months in Toronto and in New York and in London.
Right.
And it's New York and London that look at the gold market like it's an insane investment thesis. You don't want to be invested in it. It makes no sense. It's almost as if it has not been in a bull market the last 10 years, because as far as they're concerned, they didn't buy it and they don't care about it. But you move to Toronto and there's a much greater openness, I think, because their system of capital formation, their stock market, the Toronto Stock Exchange, funds a huge resource sector, and gold is a part of that. So
right.
There's an implicit understanding, a deeper understanding within that stock market of the role that gold has played the last 10 years, a greater market awareness. And again, we really haven't seen that kind of attention given to gold in the U.S. space. Alan, we come back to that issue of being in a long-term bull market. We certainly see it being intact, but let's just begin there. Your basic summary of, is the bull market still intact?
Yes, it actually began on 9/11. I was sitting there watching the second tower coming down, and I said, you know what? The world is a different place. And I immediately started writing about gold and gold stocks. I am, if not the world's biggest bull on precious metals, I'm darn close. I think we're in a very, very long-term secular phase that's going to extend out years to come. It's going to surprise anybody. And as far as I'm concerned, there's no way this can possibly end until you see the most incredible rush into gold shares. Yeah, pretty much like we saw technology issues in 2000, an absolute mania. That's the way it'll end, and it's probably many years away.
When you say long-term, or if we call it a Super Bowl, does that have sort of a time frame or a price destination in mind? Obviously, you don't have to mention both, but we generally think in terms of the next 2 to 5 years. Is that in keeping with your view of sort of a Super Bowl in gold, or are we too conservative in that?
No, I think the horizon is further out than that. I don't think the fundamentals change to be against gold until we can find ways out of our fiscal mess. And it's not only the general population that has too much debt, it's the federal government. I think we're in a period where we are bound to see a huge surge in inflation somewhere down the road. And it may be a phase in which it just continues to build and build and build. It goes to 4%, it goes to 6%, it goes to 8%, finally goes to 10%. Who knows, possibly higher. Everything costs more. You're going to have something that will trade well against currencies, against anything that you can buy, and that will be gold. It's always been money for thousands of years. That will be the storehouse of value, as it always has been.
The last period of consolidation lasted nearly 19 months. What do you view as, from a technical standpoint, sort of the function of a consolidation? Why do they occur in the context of a bull market? Do you welcome them? Do you dread them? How do you view the step back in a larger context?
No, I think they're all opportunities, particularly the consolidation that's been taking place in gold. The more that you kind of irk people or kind of make them feel uncomfortable about something, the more people are going to be on the sidelines to be buyers later on. I think this consolidation mode in gold that's been going on for a long time is just a wonderful consolidation mode. We had a huge move last year to get up to over $1,900 an ounce. And what I see here, going back to 1588, this is nothing. This is fine. On a downside basis, where could gold go? It wouldn't totally surprise me if we saw a move just below $1,500 an ounce. It really wouldn't bother me. I don't think we will, but it wouldn't bother me. I think we're well on our way to higher prices. I think the gold companies have started to pay dividends for a very good reason. They know what's going on out there. They can see the future better than any of us, and they're all looking at prices, if not this year, next year, $2,000 an ounce. Further on down the road, I don't even want to say what might be possible, but it could be much higher than that.
Well, you know, we often think in terms of nominal values, and that's where you're picking a price, $1,585, $1,900, $5,000, whatever the nominal value is, to me it's less relevant than your purchasing power. And what does that ounce of gold buy you in real terms, whether that's Dow shares or acres or single-family homes? We've seen the Dow gold shrink from 43 to 1, the Dow gold ratio, now hovering around 8 to 1. What do you think is more likely, that we see the shares, the Dow component, diminish or gold increase, or do we get the best of both worlds? What do you think?
Well, when I became a gold bull, I put together a Dow gold ratio target of 5 to 1. I later adjusted that to 6 to 1 because it looked like terrorism was on a significant decline and we didn't have to worry about that part of the equation. But just a few months ago, I lowered that ratio back to 5 to 1, noting that we fiscally and economically, we still have problems ahead of us that are near insoluble because Congress doesn't want to act, the SEC doesn't want to act, the banks don't want to help. So I think we're going from 8 to 1 to 5 to 1. So any incarnation of that ratio that you might want to look at between 8 to 1 and 5 to 1 favors gold and certainly gold stocks over the Dow. If the Dow, just for the sake of argument, if you were going to think that the Dow would double over the next 10 years to 25,000, well, gold is probably going to triple. So where do you want to be?
We've seen the ratio get as low as 1 to 1 going back to the 80s. And of course, we were at probably a 3-to-1 ratio on the basis of economic and financial issues. It wasn't until the Russians invaded Afghanistan and there was a major push, a fear factor, which we hadn't seen in metals, on the basis of geopolitics and a shift in oil to the Ruskies. That was the real concern. And we quickly went from 3-to-1 to 1-to-1. So political overlays, obviously those are X factors, things that can't be accounted for. You're more comfortable with a 5-to-1 than, say, a 3-to-1, I guess.
Well, you know what? Let's take it one step at a time. I think 5-to-1 is quite reasonable. 1-to-1 is going to require things to happen that I don't think any of us want to consider. A world that's, wow, a fraction of what we want it to be. So I don't want to consider that scenario. I don't think it's wise to consider that scenario yet. I still think it's a low percentage probability, whereas the 5-to-1, I think, is a high percentage probability.
Now, coming back around to what we were talking about a minute ago with the shares, there's concerns over deleveraging in the financial markets. Those abound. Can you foresee an environment where gold holds its own while mining companies trade lower in sync with the general equities market?
Yeah, it can happen. If you're talking about a Dow that's going to be 8,000 for years to come, investors just don't want any part of any equity whatsoever. But I don't think that's going to be the case. If gold is on its way to $2,000 or $3,000 an ounce, at some point I think you're going to see that sponsorship where people say, you know what, it's not only that gold is going up and these companies are making more money, but heck, they're paying dividends and they're paying big dividends. You take a look at a stock like Newmont Mining, where their chairman has decided, all right, folks, we have a dividend policy in place, and it's going to be generous. And if gold gets to, let's say, $2,400 an ounce, we're going to be paying, I think it was...
Nine-ish?
Yeah, nine-ish, based on the price of Newmont right now. You're talking at a humongous yield. I don't even want to have my money in a bank. I don't want to be investing in ExxonMobil for a dividend. I want to be investing in Newmont. I want that big dividend somewhere down the road.
It was a stroke of genius that I think your managers are repeating from the 70s. If you recall that time frame, many of your South African shares, your annual dividends were more generous than your original cost basis.
Right.
It was an interesting era. But, you know, that's one of the things we have to come to terms with. You mentioned we've got the general population with too much debt. We've got the federal government with too much debt. And again, those concerns about deleveraging have more to do with default. I guess what you're implying is that default may be less of a risk and inflation more of a risk, given the tool set that the Fed and the world's various central bankers are working with. Maybe this last week was an indication of that, with the ECB, the Bank of England, everybody kind of letting loose, including the Chinese.
Yeah, I don't see any way out of the mess over the long term without a substantial phase of inflation for probably years ahead. Because when you have inflation, you're paying off debts with cheaper currency, cheaper dollars, cheaper euros, cheaper whatever it is, whatever the currency is, you're paying off less. It makes the problem a lot easier to solve.
Taking the inflationary route.
Correct. So I think this has to happen, particularly with governments.
Now, isn't it interesting that the BLS is back to the NBER? You've got the whole sort of economic community back debating the academic point between chained versus unchained inflation statistics. And the big argument is that the current rate of inflation is grossly overstating reality, that in fact, the real rate of inflation is lower than the current stated rate. Do you see or smell a rat, should I say?
Of course I do. God bless John Williams for establishing ShadowStats.com. I visit there every once in a while and I take a look at the charts, and he was formerly with the government. He is an economist, and frankly, I trust his charts more than the government. I think he's telling the truth.
So the beauty is we actually have a stock of debt which can be paid back. If you're saying that inflation is 1% to 2%, 2% to 3%, and you're running a real-world rate of 4%, 5%, or 6%, creditors might not be too happy about that. But over a long enough period of time, you're effectively taking care of your debt problem, aren't you?
Yes, you are. But, you know, we have to get cracking about this very soon. I mean, I just remember a few years ago looking at the national debt, and it was $9 trillion, and it's soon to be $16 trillion. Congress is going to have to raise the debt limit again very soon. What's going on here? Can anybody play this game? Casey Stengel used to observe.
Well, backtrack just a moment. I mean, in your own portfolio, this is back to sort of gold versus gold shares and things like that. In your own portfolio, would you tend to emphasize physical gold exposure more or the companies that mine the metal? What risks and benefits come with either approach?
Well, we're probably at a stage where there's so much apprehension about the future that you want to have small physical holdings. And by that, I'm talking about coins, something that can be readily exchanged in case there's some type of huge national emergency down the road, or it's a scenario that no one wants to consider, but heaven forfend if you're not protected to some degree. I do favor the gold stocks. Actually, holding on to bullion is crazy. I don't know that I'm ever going to see it. I don't know that I'm ever going to hold it in my hands. I don't know that it's ever going to be necessary. I would rather invest in gold shares and look for a modestly depressing scenario 10 years down the road where I can make a lot of money in gold, because that's the place to be. Because as I say, there's going to be higher inflation and gold will shine under those circumstances. So I would stick with gold stocks. I tend to be conservative, so I like stocks like Newmont the best, but I think there's always room to be a little bit speculative and climb on board with the juniors.
Now, in May, you sent out a special report on this, and yeah, the XAU gold ratio had slipped to about 11. Hadn't seen that ratio. I guess we've seen it maybe twice, three times in 30 years. I mean, they're a compelling value. The flip side of that is they've been a losing prospect to get to that sort of compelling value level. We've got the political risks with the South African miners. The ANC is talking about either taking over the mines directly, nationalizing, or just slapping a tax of 50% or more. Starts to sound like the French with their 75% tax. We also have regulatory risk. Lucky Friday this last year for Hecla shut down. Government basically said, this is what you need to clean up and you can't operate until it happens. You know, there's a whole host of things. Are those the kinds of things that are weighing on those shares? Or is it really that the American public has no imagination for a gold bull market and have been thoroughly educated against owning gold in any form? Because frankly, Wall Street would prefer that you're buying regular issues, things that are more of their staple, and they're hawking on a daily basis.
Yeah, the regulators don't want you buying gold. It's certainly not. I think the issues that you mentioned before do have some impact, but to a greater extent, it's that people are just generally ignorant about gold, gold shares. But I think that point is going to come. You just have to see higher inflation, or you have to see a little more turmoil worldwide before they get involved. But as I said before, I don't see how this gold, a super bull market, that's what I've called it for years. In fact, when I made the decision that gold was in a bull market on 9-1-1, I said super bull market. I use those words. There's no way that this is going to end until you have a mania at least as emphatic as the tech mania in 1999 and 2000. At least as emphatic.
What was interesting is we saw sort of a foreshadowing of that late summer, early fall 2008, where investors were looking at physical metals and just wanted to own it. Didn't like what they saw developing in the equities market. And for the first time in that stretch, which you mentioned 2001 up to that point, price was not relevant. The product and getting immediate delivery was. And we saw very generic things, you know, kilo bars. You were allocated one per day off of the exchanges. I mean, the demand for physical metals was off the charts. The premiums were on the rise. Krugerrands were pulling 10 and 15% premiums over the spot price on the wholesale market. Eagles 30, 35% over. I mean, where all of a sudden, when people wanted to own the physicals, there was a strange reality, something that most investors were not aware of, that in fact, there was not an infinite amount of product available. They couldn't snap their fingers and say, okay, now I want my $10 million in gold delivered tomorrow. There was a bit of a process and a premium because they waited. Do you feel like the summer months, you know, when you look at today, you could buy anything you want. There's no premium in the gold shares. Do you see contraindicators? You know, yes, we're in a bull market, and yes, now is a decent time to be looking at anything that is gold or silver related.
Oh, yes, it's certainly an opportunity. Anytime you're in a consolidation mode and sentiment has turned so sharply south of where it was at the highs, you know that it's a buyer's market. It's not a seller's market. So, yeah, there's certainly opportunities here.
Well, maybe one last thing. If you could contrast, I mean, this is a Super Bowl market and metals. If you could contrast the metals long-term bull market with perhaps an overall commodities bull market, is the common theme global central banker intervention, or is there a difference actually when you start getting into the specific supply and demand dynamics, separating out gold and silver from your soft commodities, your industrials, and other things like that?
Well, we're not even sure the central bankers can do anything about the problems. That's one of the reasons why I'm so bullish on gold. The longer problems remain unsolved, the longer there are some questions about the future, the brighter the prospect is for gold. I mean, it's just a question of finding ways to hedge against problems in the future. It's finding ways to protect yourself, and that would be precious metals.
It sounds to me like you're fairly certain QE3, QE4, QE5, sounds like a broken record, QE6. Do you think that's really the only way forward as we get, you know, beyond the fiscal cliff and sort of the intransigence on both sides of the aisle to make any real reforms at the fiscal level? Does this ultimately get thrown back at Bernanke to solve?
Well, quite frankly, I don't know that we can keep on going to QE6, QE7, QE8. There comes a point at which they have to admit that their approach is not working. If we do have a QE3 and the Dow and the S&P and the major averages are still mired down 2 years from now, I mean, at some point they have to admit this is not working. We've got to find something else to do. And again, this is a huge question mark in front of this, and it's another reason to be involved in gold and gold shares and precious metals and commodities in general. You want things that you can touch and feel.
This is perhaps far afield from the charts and is not meant to be divisive in any way, but statistically, 7.4% has been the cutoff for unemployment numbers. The incumbent doesn't get in if the number is higher than that. What that means is the current number, 8.2%, reiterated here recently, doesn't spell a successful run for Obama. You know, we're talking about a fairly negative picture for equities, a very positive picture for precious metals over the next several years. Would, hypothetically, a Romney election help or hurt the situation, in your opinion? And again, I don't know if that if you can chart that or put a statistic to it, but you think sentiment could change?
Yes, I do. I don't think anything happened in the last 4 years that would give me any confidence that a re-election of Obama would help us over the next 4 years. Romney, at the very least, is a change of face and a businessman, so perhaps that's going to help. I don't guarantee that it will. I think we're in an economic funk because of what has happened with derivatives markets, with banks and brokers, giving us the situation with this housing boom that should not have been and subsequent fallout and subsequent collapse. It may be that Obama couldn't do anything about it. I'm not sure. You know, I hear people talk about, oh, this great surplus that Clinton had. Well, you know, the surplus that we had, the budgetary surplus, had nothing to do with Clinton. It had everything to do with the fact that you were in this super bull market for stocks, and you had so many people taking an extraordinary amount of capital gains. That's what our surplus was due to. Nothing else. But yes, overall, I would hope that Romney would be a better choice for the next 4 years.
There was a similar period of time leaving the Carter era and coming into the Reagan administration and a bounce in equities, a good 3-4 months of positive traction. And then the markets basically went somewhere close to hell, maybe just purgatory. But it was an 18 to 24 month slog where it didn't matter if there was new ideas. There was a lot of fiscal issues which were already baked into the cake and they still had to be addressed. Maybe it's that environment, you know, post-election 2013, 2014, where, again, fiscal intransigence, very little progress made in terms of our debt levels, inflation kicking up, that we see sort of a reemergence of the bull market in metals. Or do you think we can actually see prices move considerably even this year, specifically gold and silver?
Yes, I think the odds will favor waiting until somewhat after the election until we see what's happening. I would not be surprised if this consolidation mode goes on for a while. The longer it goes on, the more bullish I'm going to be anyway. I think you're still in that phase where you're discouraging people by gold going nowhere. It goes up $20, goes down $20. There almost seems to be no point getting involved. Newmont goes up a few points, it goes down a few points. But again, with Newmont, per se, I'm getting back to dividends. That's where I want to be. I don't see any immediate changes happening if Romney gets in. I will say that I've been a registered Democrat my entire life, but I can't remember the last Democrat I voted for.
Well, you raised something earlier, which I think is very compelling in terms of this consolidation going on and it taking some time still to finish it. You're loading the sidelines with people who will be buyers later on. Anyone who is uncomfortable, that's your volume statistics in the future. Increasing prices and increasing volume. It's everyone coming off the sidelines.
You're loading the queue with sponsors, with buyers.
Listen, we'd love to carry on the conversation, and perhaps you join us again in the next couple of months or years or what have you. Your insights and cross currents are fantastic, and I can't recommend your newsletter highly enough. What's the best way for someone to look at the newsletter and try it on for size?
Well, you can get some samples if you go to www.crosscurrents.net, not .com, but .net, and there's a dash between the words cross and current. And there are links there where you can click for 3 free issues. It's a trial. Doesn't cost a penny. And as you say, I don't charge enough because it really is a labor of love. The best thing for me is the kudos page on my website. That's what keeps me going. I get letters all the time.
I couldn't agree more. I'm I would encourage you to raise your price because it's worth it and it's of high value. And I think anyone who is not going directly to www.cross-currents.net for the free 3 months and then ultimately subscribing on beyond that would be insane. You need as many tools at your fingertips in these markets as possible. Making perspicacious decisions in this kind of an environment is an imperative, and you can't do that. You can't do that without taking on and seeing things from multiple perspectives, and having a technical overlay to fundamental analysis is a great compliment. So, Alan, we appreciate you joining us and appreciate your contribution to not only this conversation, but what you do for the investment community. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, David, that really puts things in perspective. You know, it's interesting listening to Alan talk about the length of the bull market, how long he thinks this is going to last. You know, we've been looking at maybe 2-3 years. We don't know timing, but this is a man who's looking from an equities point of view as well and saying, no, this could be many, many years of bull market before it's over.
It's certainly more consistent with Don's view that this could be a 5 to 7 to 10 year event from this point, making it a 2025 year bull market in total. Yes, that defines it as a super bull market.
Well, let me ask you a question, though, because we talked about QE 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, however long QE goes, because we know it's one of the main tools in the Federal Reserve's toolbox. But do we need QE at all for gold to actually continue up in this bull market?
Well, certainly it put a new bit of wind in the sails, QE1 did, and QE2 did. But in terms of being an effective policy measure, it was not very effective at all.
So you're saying the dollar could still continue to devalue whether we ever see QE again?
Well, I think we could continue to see gold on the rise. There's nothing in the gold price that is predicated on QE or dependent on QE. I think that would just be more wind in the sails yet again, although not effective in terms of reviving the economy. And I think what we're really looking at is the beginning of the end. If the Fed ultimately pulls the trigger on QE3, it's the beginning of the end and an indication of just how desperate things are that they're now using things to policy measures that they know to be ineffective.
Well, and David, it reminds me of the Weimar Republic back in the early 20s when they finally pulled out all the stops and just started printing. It turned into what Alan was talking about, this high or superinflation, maybe even a hyperinflationary end game. And that's unfortunate for everyone because you can't afford to live when that's happening.
Yeah, monetization of specific asset classes, and if need be, stepping into the equity markets to monetize there, and just expanding the Fed balance sheet, I think you could see an explosion of the Fed's balance sheet that ultimately is negative for the U.S. bond market as we look at unsustainable balance sheet levels, not only the Fed, but also for the Treasury. And I think one of the interesting comments from Alan today was the number of people who are in queue, the future buyers of gold. And if you will, look at the U.S. Treasury market, the long-term bull market, which began in 1982, price levels that we haven't seen in history, and interest rate levels which are at historic lows. These are people who are concerned about the return of their capital, not the return on their capital.
Right.
Obviously, with inflation factored in, you're talking about zero return, zero interest, in fact, negative returns. And in fact, in Newman's parlance, you basically have a large queue of future gold buyers
sitting
in the treasury market
right
today.
Now. Yeah,
exactly. So we've seen inflows into treasuries on the basis of fear. But it's liquidity concerns which are number one in their mind, with solvency concerns being addressed simultaneously as treasuries appear relatively more attractive, that's relatively more attractive, what kind of behavior might we expect in the bond market if treasuries were weighed in absolute terms, not on a relative basis, but on their own merits, not just relative to other sovereign paper? And again, that notion of how long is the queue of gold buyers, both the naysayers today, but also the treasury buyers today, which are assuming that they're making the best and safest bet. They're assuming that treasury market paper is the most secure credit. What happens when that is turned? And we do see potentially, yes, 5, 7, 10 years of growth into the gold market as we see the line grow longer for people who want to own precious metals, not only today, but also in the future.
Well, you've been listening to the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary. I'm Kevin Orrick, along with David McIlvaney, and our guest today, Alan Newman. You can find us at McIlvaney.com, McIlvaney.com, or give us a call at 800-525-9556.
This has been the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary. The views expressed should not be considered to be a solicitation or a recommendation for your investment portfolio. You should consult a professional financial advisor to assess your suitability for risk and investment. Join us again next week for a new edition of the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary.